Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by the Museum of Food and Drink, sparking curiosity about food with exhibits you can eat. For more information, visit mofad.org.
Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. We are a member-supported nonprofit food radio station. That means that every single thing we do, from broadcasting 35 weekly shows for free, to bringing you exclusive content from sold-out food events across the country, to offering scholarships to high school students, is only possible thanks to the support of our loyal members. And we want you to join the club. Become a member during our 2017 summer drive to get access to sweet swag and pledge your support to the world's only food radio station. Visit heritageradionetwork.org/donate to become a member now.
We talk about food, we talk about music, with musical dudes, finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
When the sun breaks, feelings always hurt. Your feelings, fucking feelings.
Your way, no one can wait. Welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm one half your host, Darren Bresnitz, out here in LA with Maddie Matheson, chef, bon vivant, TV personality.
Just all around good
jack
guy.
Jack of trades.
I think that's the word we're looking for. Master of none.
Master of none. Welcome to the States.
Yeah. Good to be here.
Ontario born and bred?
No, I was born in New Brunswick.
New Brunswick.
And then lived in the Maritimes. And then went to, finished elementary school, like grade seven and eight, and then went to high school in Port Colborne.
Port Colborne, what's that like?
Beautiful town. It's got a canal. It's great. Got a canal. You can jump in, take a swim.
Does it freeze over in the winter? You skate down it?
Yeah. No. I don't. I may be the only Canadian. I've never ice skated.
You've never strapped it on?
I once in grade four. Didn't like it. Yeah.
Do people know that about you in Canada?
I don't know. I'm not a fan of hockey. Pretty indifferent to most sports. So, I don't know.
So if your love was not sports growing up and hockey, which we can edit out for when we air this in Canada. what were the loves growing up?
Music.
Yeah.
Mostly music.
First favorite band.
First favorite band, probably, like, I think Sepultura.
Mm.
Sepultura and, like, Pantera, Slayer.
So heavy.
Yeah, like, all that shit. Like, I think the very first tape I got was Fear of a Black Planet. Was, like, the first, and then, like, Judgment Night soundtrack on tape.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
All that kind of shit. And then I got into metal through Judgment Night. I was buying it for rap and, like, Onyx and that kind of stuff. I really was into that kind of shit when I was younger, like a kid. And then all of a sudden I was like, whoa, what's all this heavy shit?
I feel like that soundtrack had that story that went both ways. Yeah. People who bought it for heavy metal and then got into rap, or vice versa.
Yeah, man. It spawned a horrible breed of music.
Yeah, it really did. Then somebody went, wait, what if we didn't keep them separate?
What if we were just one band?
You grew up, and then when did you move to Toronto?
2000.
And what put you around, like, what, like 19, 20 years old?
I was 17, so yeah, I was like 19. Yeah.
What brought you to Toronto?
Culinary school.
Okay, so from early age, you wanted to be a chef, wanted to cook, wanted to get into it?
No. No, not that typical story. Didn't want to be, like, the astronaut. And, you know, like, I only got accepted into one school.
Okay.
And it was culinary.
Great.
So I was just like, my only thing, and I've said this before, like, I just wanted to move to Toronto.
Sure.
By any means necessary. And the only school I got, I didn't get into, like, UFT or any of that
right.
kind of shit. So, or Ryerson, because I wasn't really an art guy. So, I just got into culinary school at Humber College in, like, Etobicoke. And lived in Rexdale, which is kind of a classic, kind of cutty spot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. What was the
like, the mayor.
Yeah.
The mayor, Rob Ford. Rest in peace. But he kind of made it famous. He was, like, smoking. He used to smoke crack there
a
lot.
Yeah, that was one of his haunts.
Yeah.
I think you could say a Rob Ford haunt.
It was like a Rob Ford haunt.
Yeah.
Rexdale.
You know, so you start cooking, not really by choice, but just by sort of luck. What was the food scene like back then, especially in Toronto?
I don't even know. Like, I wasn't really into the food scene. Like, there was these – back then, there was, like, about five – really well-known chefs that you could work for, like Mark Tewitt, Jamie mm-hmm. Kennedy, Michael Statlander, Mark McEwen.
Yep.
So those were kind of like the big boys. Like, Mark McEwen's kind of almost like the Gordon Ramsay of Canada in a way.
Is that a compliment?
Yeah, like, no, he's like a big, very successful,
got it,
powerful chef. We're buddies now. It's
tons of restaurants.
Fun. Yeah, tons Empire. Of restaurants. Like, he's like the Tom Colicchio of Canada on the Top Chef kind of shit.
Oh, I got
you know?
You. I got
like
you.
He's like the big Canadian TV guy. And there was all those chefs that you could work for. And then when I got out of culinary school, which I dropped out of actually.
Why'd you drop out?
I went on tour with like a metal band.
I mean, classic.
Yeah.
That's actually a classic answer.
Yeah.
When you ask most people why they drop out of culinary school, to go and tour the metal band. Did you just feel like at that moment that you had sort of learned what you had to learn? I mean, did you take to it at all?
Yeah, no. I think that culinary school was the first time I ever got, like, high grades because it was based on – it was a trade. Like, if I cooked something well, I got good grades. If I performed, I got good grades. So I really enjoyed cooking, and I was, like, decent at it. So it clicked. I really enjoyed it. Like, I liked going to class, and then I dropped out. There was, like, I was one of those, like, you know, I don't need a fucking piece of paper to say I'm a fucking graduate. I learned what I learned.
Yeah.
I felt that I was confident enough to go get a job, and I thought that I was fine. So I went on tour with a metal band across Canada, and then came back, and then started working at a restaurant called Le Select Bistro.
Oh, yeah. Legendary.
Yeah, it's the oldest standing restaurant in Toronto. Like, one of the longest standing restaurants in Toronto. Definitely the best bistro.
I mean, did you walk in and you're like, I'm going to make you an omelet and prove my chops?
Yeah, no, like, kind of. But no, like, I just went in and did, like, a trial shift. And then the chef, Brad Clark at the time, he was like, yo, do you want, like, you can... You're good.
You're good.
Like I was just like one of those things where like, fuck, I could hold a knife and I could like butcher a rabbit, you know, or something, right. Or make fucking chicken liver pate, whatever.
And then he was like, let me see your degree. And you're like, about that.
I'm like, I don't know.
So you're there. I mean, what was the shit was like the same hard partying like lifestyle that they had in New York at that time? Or was it like more calm because it was Canada?
No, I think it was probably... You know, I always partied hard. I don't know about, like, you know, my chef at Le Select. He was a bit of a booze bag. But, right. Like, I think, yeah, like, there was definitely, like, once I got in at Le Select and became, like, you know, friends with everyone, like, all of a sudden another door kind of opened on the late night drinking. And, like, you know, there was a lot of late night drinking and drugging and all that kind of stuff.
So it's pretty, I mean, it's interesting because I feel like of that era, that was sort of just the norm. It was like the Kitchen Confidential, like,
yeah.
Sort of like still not, because around this time, early 2000s, chefs were not what it is today.
No, it was pre-fucking, like, you know, it was like pre-phones and like Instagram and all this bullshit. And it's like, it was still just like cooking. Like, you had to like find cookbooks. You had to like learn about chefs. You couldn't just like be, like, you couldn't just be like on Instagram watching Renee Redzepi talk about fruit all day.
Right.
And it's like, and no diss to that, but it's like, that's where we're at. You can see what the best chefs in the world are doing at any fucking given moment. And before, you had to be like you, it would be tough to find like a Danielle Blue book or yeah. Paul Bocuse book, or, you know, like, it would be really difficult to find that kind of shit. And and now everything's at, you can get anything you need.
You can read reviews about why I will not be reviewing Noma in Mexico.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's that's where we've gone to these days.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, oh, I'm not going to write about Renoir at the Met because no.
Yeah, like, people, that's the world we live in.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're in Toronto, you're cooking, and it seems like, I guess my question is, if you sort of fell backwards into this, when did it sort of click being like, this is beyond, without
the moment?
The moment, like, when you're like, I don't just love this, like, this is what I want to do.
It was a really clear moment for me. It was after I worked at Le Select, after I worked at La Palette, which is another great French restaurant in Toronto. And I had an opportunity to go meet these two guys, Brian and Key, who are opening Oddfellows.
Yeah.
And it was for the chef position. It was opening the restaurant. It was creating the full menu. It was going to be my menu through and through. And it was just, there was this moment, we were about to open, we were about a month out from opening, and there was a tour. There was a tour with a bunch, like, literally, like, five of my best friends in band, like, five bands, a full Canadian tour, a dream, you know, like, just, like, best friends traveling across Canada for a month. And I went to Brian and Key, and I was like, hey, can we put off the opening for a month, you know? Like, I was like 26.
Yo, it's my best friends.
Yeah. And I was just like, I can't, like, it's funny now to think about that. Like, if somebody was to say something like that to me, I'd just be like, get the fuck out of here.
Get the fuck out of here.
And Brian took me aside kind of and was just like, do you want to be a chef or do you want to be like a roadie and like a cook?
Yeah.
Or like, what do you want to do? And And we had this long conversation, and by the end of it, I was like, I want to be a chef. I want to open this restaurant. I want to do this. And he's like, well, then we just built this restaurant. Be the fucking chef.
Be the chef. Which is sometimes those life lessons when you go like, oh, right, sorry.
Yeah.
Not even sorry, but like, oh, yeah. Because, you know, when you start to move in a direction away from what your friends are doing, sometimes you feel like, who am I? You question yourself because you got to take a step in a way that they're not moving.
Yeah, no, it was really, it was oddly a difficult decision. It was a good decision, apparently, you know, since since that, everything
since is... Since you're not roadieing still.
Yeah, since I'm not, you know, living in a van and sleeping on fucking people's floors getting pink eye.
Nothing wrong with that, just not the life for you.
Yeah, like, I didn't play the music, yeah. and I didn't even roadie. I would just go and get drunk and hang out with friends, and, like, I couldn't even, like, load gear, because at the end of the night, I was so fucked up. I'd, like, drop a cab or a head or drop something, and people were like, yeah, they were just like, I'm just like the morale guy.
So what was it like to open up your first place? I mean, did you feel pressure? Did you feel that you had to, like, dig deep? I mean, did you already have, you know, what's it like to put together that first menu?
It was... Oddly, I think I was very ignorant at that time. Mm. I didn't really understand the complexity or the scene in Toronto, and I opened it kind of just haphazardly, I feel now, looking back on it. Like, I just made, like, I think it was really cool because we got, like, really good reviews, yeah. And most of the reviews were really good, and people liked it. It was a small little restaurant, so it was like 26 seats,
yeah.
one table, communal style, and I just cooked, like, kind of Canadian food. I had, like, a venison burger.
Sure.
We had, like, a fucking a lamb stew for two that we would serve at the table in a pressure cooker that was pressurized, and we would release it at the table. We would do just, like, a bunch of bullshit stuff. But it really... you know, I just didn't know the scene. I wasn't friends with chefs. I wasn't friends. I was friends with punks and hardcore kids, and like that. Those were my friends. I didn't know anybody in the scene. Like, I wasn't, like, working at Le Select was a job. Working at La Palette was a fucking actual pirate ship. You know, like, it was fucking mental at La Palette, and so I really didn't know chefs. I didn't know the scene. I wasn't in. I didn't work for any of those big named chefs, mm-hmm. So I wasn't part of that weird inner circle that I now know and understand. Right. So I was kind of an outsider. Nobody knew who the fuck I was. And, like, the first article that was ever written about me was, like, who is this kid?
Right.
And that was, like, and it was super funny because I was just, like, I got this amazing article written by Ivy Knight, and it was just like, who is this kind of, like, wonder kid? Like, where did he come from, and why is this restaurant, like, so cool and crazy?
I've been here.
Yeah, like, well, I was just cooking. Like, I think it was, like, you know, I was just, and not to be, like, I was head down trying to focus on my career. I was just literally just fucking cooking as a job. And then this opportunity came, and I took it, and I was like, yeah, I can cook. Do I know how to do food costs properly and labor costs? No. Do I know how to make your restaurant money? No, but I can cook.
I can cook, and you guys worry about that. You let me be the artist, right?
Yeah, and I was just like, do you mind if I do, like, Coke every day and, like, drink beers every day? And they're like, no, it's pretty cool. Like, that's fine, and we're just going to listen to Husker Du and fucking party every day. And, like, it was a really pretty good vibe at the time.
That sounds like a good vibe. We're going to take a quick break. I'm going to reflect on that vibe because that is a, like, hey, I will come and work for you. I just have a couple of bullet points I need you to sign off on.
I do a lot of coke and drink a lot of beer. And
we have a certain amount of indie rock that we're going to listen to.
Yeah, we need to have really good music.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you did all that and they're like, you can have all that, but you got to listen to some really bullshit music.
We're going to be playing Shania Twain.
Yeah, we have some really good Frankophile stuff because of the, you know, percentage law. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about parts and labor, and we're going to talk about your work with Vice and all the media stuff.
Sounds good.
We have a song from the archives on Snacky Tunes here on heritageradionetwork.org.
You should understand, there's nothing to talk about. You and I may just disagree, you and I can't relate.
Do you mean?
What do you mean? You could hardly get to your feet. You won't leave yourself alone. How could you turn this down when it's something you needed? You left off on the telephone that you had been meaning to dial. Deny, terrible you, you lurch yourself to the bone. You say that this doesn't matter to you.
Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. We are here with Maddie Matheson. If you have a chance, please dig into the archive, subscribe, listen to Snacky Tunes. You can find it anywhere that podcasts are available. So you're in Canada. You're running your first restaurant, Oddfellows. Listening to Husker Du, partying. When did the restaurant that I would say you probably most named for, Parts and Labor, starting to come to be an idea?
Parts came around about a year into Oddfellows. Mm-hmm. Richard and Jesse, who owned this nightclub called The Social, which mm-hmm. was like a super grimy, fucking really like, it was like the street level nightclub. It wasn't like the fancy Boom Boom. It mm-hmm. was like the fucking grimy doing drugs,
yeah.
fucking in the washroom, doing coke, like unknown DJs playing and just fucking ripping things apart.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. And, that was just down the street from Oddfellows, and they used to come in all the time and eat, and we became really good friends. And then Richard and Jesse and Brian and Key started talking and just being like, yo, we should team up. Like, we know how to run clubs, and like, we do this, and you guys are like, Brian and Key are amazing designers, right? Like, they have a thing called Castor Design.
Yeah, yeah.
So those dudes are like making fucking beautiful lights, beautiful furniture, crazy shit, and really fucking interesting people. And so then we were just like, Let's make a big crazy restaurant.
And let's take the small craziness and unleash.
Oddfellows was still the craziest restaurant that ever existed in Toronto.
Was it because it was just like you were just so young and it was so new and no one was really like a restaurateur?
Yeah, it was like. Like, I'm writing my, like, I'm working on my book right now.
Yeah.
And I'm, like, the chapter is called How to, like, Open and Close a Restaurant in Less Than 2 Years.
Oh, great.
You know, and it's really, like, Oddfellows was just a fucking insane time. I was 26, and it was just, like, everyone was partying. Nobody worked in the restaurant that was over 25, 26.
Right.
And, and it was just, like, a crazy, crazy fucking time. And we just didn't have any, like, we had like a PDR in the back in the that was just like a Winnebago that Brian like rebuilt and designed, and only had like Neil Young records in it, so like a wood burning stove, and like it was like a the sickest place,
right?
And so like we would let people come, and like people would call the restaurant and be like, hey, I heard you have this restaurant, and there's like there's no rules, like and we were just like, what? And they're like, yeah, like we can like come and like smash stuff, or like we can come and like do coke and like bring a stripper. Can we bring a stripper in your restaurant? And we're just like, what? And we're just like, because we were just kids. Like we like every Sunday we would have like a grazing night. We called it grazing nights, and we or Taco Hell, which was like we would have like all you could eat Sundays.
Yeah,
like $15 all you can eat. We lost so much money.
And yeah, I was gonna say, what are the food costs on that,
dude? It's crazy. And so, but we just, and half of our friends would come, so it, like nobody would actually pay.
Yeah,
and we would just give beer away because we were fucked. Or right. I would start pouring shots, and we would like give away like 3-4 bottles of whiskey every Sunday, and it was like a really crazy time. And we wanted to open something even crazier,
right?
Which is Parts and Labor, because we were always like, let's open up something like if Oddfellows was on acid,
sure.
And we,
which is a classic pitch when you're trying to go to restaurateurs.
Yeah, we're just like, well, they did it all with their own money, like,
yeah,
it's crazy. So we opened Oddfellows with like no money, but. And we opened personally with no money and zero business plans.
But they had you.
Yeah, they got me and I had them. It was amazing times. And so we opened Parts and Labor about a year and a half after Oddfellows opened.
Yeah.
And it was like 100 – it's about 136 seats. We got an old warehouse out in Parkdale. There was only literally two other restaurants in Parkdale at that time, like way ahead of
the. Which has changed just a little bit.
It's changed a little bit. Parkdale now, it's changed for, I think, for the better, man. Yeah. Like I lived in Parkdale for 14 years.
Yeah.
So it's like, I really, that's my home.
Yeah.
You know, Parkdale's my fucking home. I've lived there for a long fucking time. And we just wanted to, I wanted to add to it. And like, we got some flack from people, you know, we're gentrifying and all this shit. Like, there was no fucking restaurants. There was local Kitchen and Wine Bar and Cowbell that was right next to us. And when we opened up, it was still fucking, it was so cutty and like, all everyone, like, we would open the back doors where the kitchen was. Like, every time we opened the doors, there was somebody getting a blowjob or shooting up fucking heroin and like smoking crack. And it was just like the back alleyway is just like a crackhead highway.
Yeah.
So it's still pretty, pretty cutty. But yeah, when we just opened up this like large communal kind of dining room, like 8 tables, just you can fit 12 people at each table, massive, really long bar, 3 chef's tables in the kitchen. And we wanted to do something really cool. So like, I was like, yo, I'm going to start wearing like chef whites again.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm going to put chef whites on. We're going to have like this big crazy restaurant, but we're going to wear like chef whites and like try to do kind of like really nice food. And we're going to have a live music venue in the basement, and there's going to be like no windows, and we're going to be able to smash beers. Like downstairs will be this crazy fucking bar, and where you can like destroy everything. And then upstairs is going to be this crazy kind of restaurant.
Right.
With serving nice lights. Food. Yeah. It was, we wanted that weird juxtaposition, that really high, low, tight, fucking loose.
And how did that work out?
It kind of, it was crazy. When we first opened, it was fucked. Because nobody knew what the fuck it was.
Right.
And with Richard and Jesse involved, it was like very much like people would come and like at 11, 12 o'clock, the upstairs would just turn into like pretty much not a nightclub, but like a giant bar.
Sure.
Like we had, our restaurant has a capacity for 417 people.
Right.
So we were over capacity every fucking night for 2 years almost.
Right. And are people ordering food or are they just like drinking and partying?
People were, well, after 11, yeah, people were just partying. But like we were a full blown restaurant and like music wouldn't start downstairs till midnight. And so like it was like a full blown restaurant, but it was still, the vibe was so crazy because it was like, it was so, it was just a warehouse. So like it was really loud. We played really loud music.
What were you playing?
Anything. We would play anything. We would play rap. We would play like Led Zeppelin, Black Sabbath. We would play like Husker Du, we play like all this shit. Like I would fucking walk in there and put like Pantera on or Slayer. Like we would crank Slayer or like whatever the fuck we wanted. Like I would go in like mid song, just like switch it. Or, like there was no like rhyme or reason to the vibe. We were just like whatever we wanted. And then as soon as we got wasted, me and Brian would just like DJ.
Right. So it's just like a big clubhouse.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so the scene, I mean, how deep are you into the scene?
deep. Like it was my world. We created our own world. We had fucking amazing bands, you know, like Mac DeMarco would play there all the time, fucking Ty Segall, Ty Vec, Holy Fuck, Fucked Up, Career Suicide. Like all these, like everyone would play there. Like every, like it was like really fucking cool.
That's awesome. It's like the dream.
Yeah, like it was, like we would see, like Dumb Dumb Girls would play. Like it was like every band before Pitchfork was even on it was playing Parts and Labor.
They just had like an A&R guy for Pitchfork in the basement.
Yeah,
just
sort of like Mark Pesci, the guy that was our promoter, was like this dude who was doing amazing things and like really well connected. Like Vivian Girls would play there all the time. And like that whole, like it was right at that time of all that jangly fucking rock and roll shit. That was like super fucking like punky shit and like, which was like a massive party vibe, which we loved. And so it was just an amazing, it was an amazing time. It was just like out of control. It was an out of control kind of place.
And around this time also, you started getting into like doing video work and being a host for stuff, right?
Yeah, like I started, well,
2013?
So yeah, around that. Like I guess like 3 years into Parts and Labor, Vice started doing food.
Right.
Like, as soon as I saw their first Munchies with like David Chang, I was like, what the fuck is that?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they started doing Munchies and I was like, what the fuck are they doing? I was like, this is amazing. I was like, because Vice was like, the Vice used to have stores.
Yeah. Oh, I remember them. On Lafayette, New York, and all around. Yeah.
So the one, the Vice store in Toronto was across the street from Le Select. So I would go there and hang out all the time and go to the parties and smash it and do drugs and like be a part of that whole Vice scene. And then when they started doing food, I was like, fuck, I can contribute now.
Yeah.
Like I never felt like I had a place.
Sure.
And I always loved Vice. And I reached out to like the dudes at Vice Canada and I was like, yo, like when can I do something?
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm the guy.
I'm your guy.
I'm the guy here.
There's never been a more guy than me to be your guy.
So they were like, ah, we got this thing. We want to do something really crazy with you. And I'm like, okay, what's that? And they're like, we want to do like this thing called Hangover Cures.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to take a chef and go get them as drunk as possible. And then the next day, they're going to cook you a hangover cure.
Awesome.
And I was like, that sounds like the best thing ever. And so we shot four of them. One never aired because it was too fucked.
Like, you guys got too drunk?
No, we didn't get too – we got too drunk every fucking time. But it was just – it was hairy. It was – yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
and there was some like weird legal shit. Somebody tried to like sue us.
Right.
Because they said we stole the idea. And I'm like, who has done this fucking idea? Like, it was like a really funny thing. But somebody tried to like sue us.
Yeah.
And
that's really funny. It's like, no. I had this idea first.
Yeah. And I'm just like, I still haven't seen the people who tried to sue us. They've never put out any content that even touches or looks like whatever the fuck we were doing. So it was pretty funny.
So you got the restaurant, you're doing this, you do Parts and Labor Burger, right?
Yeah, we opened P&L Burger because I went on some stupid TV show, Burger Wars, and I didn't even know what it was. And like they came, they're like, hey, we want to shoot this thing where you make a cheeseburger. And I'm like, okay, cool. And then they came in, I shot it, and then all of a sudden I won. It was just like a thing. It wasn't like a competition show. They just came to the restaurant. I cooked burgers and I gave them to like six people and they ate the burgers. And then I guess they left. And then like there was like a weird deliberation. And then I went to this other place and they were like, oh, I won. And so then
that's the most Canadian competition show. It's like,
yeah, it was like not even a competition because they shoot everything separately. And I didn't even really know it was like, I don't know, because the show would never aired. It was the first season. So I didn't really know. And then that came out in like in August. And all of a sudden, our restaurant, like, turned into a fucking burger joint.
Right.
Which broke everyone's brain.
Right. Which, and I've heard it before about restaurants who get known for their burger, is, like, it's a blessing and a curse, and then it becomes a curse.
Yeah, dude. It's dark. And it's just, it's not fair to the cooks. It's not fair to the price point. You know, like, it really sucks. Somebody's sitting in your seat, and they're just coming in to eat a cheeseburger to try the cheeseburger. They're going to maybe have a beer.
Maybe.
You know?
They're not trying to get, like, a $60, $70 ticket of, like, an app, a main, a couple drinks.
Yeah, maybe a bottle of wine.
Yeah.
That never happened. So Parts and Labor all of a sudden turned into this weird 905, people driving from out of town, people coming up and lining up, and it really fucked with us because it fucked with our vibe.
Yeah.
And we couldn't control it because you're like, you can't choose who comes in the door, right? And so it kind of like weirdly split off our regulars a bit, and it turned into a bit of a thing. And then we were like, we need to deflect this. Let's open up a fucking burger joint. And our buddy had this space downtown, and he was kind of going through it. It wasn't really clicking.
Yeah.
And we had a few conversations with him, and he's like, yo, we can flip this quick. Because Brian and Key, like, build everything. So we went in, and within a month, we flipped it.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So we flipped his restaurant in a month and built P&L Burger with like $30,000.
Now, did you take the burgers off parts and labor and be like, if you want a burger, you have to go to this restaurant?
No.
But people just knew to go to that place if they just wanted the burger?
No, because it was even... No, it didn't really even change anything. Because people want to go to the original spot and all this kind of shit. And... like, even P&L Burgers, we closed it because it was just a headache. And, like, we were like, this isn't our dream. We're not going to, like, roll it out. We're not trying to make a Shake Shack.
Right.
Canadian beef is very expensive. And to get anything that you can even, like, mention where the fuck it comes from is expensive. So to try to sell something that's under $10 that costs, you know, $3 a pound, like, you're fucked. So it really... we had a like the conversation to close it was literally like it was doing well. It just wasn't like it was just more of a headache than anything. Like it was nobody wants to cook fucking burgers, so it was kind of difficult to keep kids there working at minimum wage because it's just a burger joint. It's not like you kind of have any chefs going there like really like. Oh, I'm really gonna make bang. The best make burgers
the,
ever.
I'm gonna make the best burger to the exact specifications that you have for me.
Yeah, so it kind of fell off, and I started traveling a lot, and you know, I take some blame on it, and the quality probably fell off a little bit. And we just came to that decision where we were like, they called me and we're like, hey, what do you think if we close P&L Burger? And I was just like, sure.
Sure.
And they're like, we're closing it.
Yeah.
And I was just like, yeah, cool.
They're like, this conversation is going to go one of one ways.
Yeah.
Or maybe two if you say no, because then you might be upset.
Yeah, but it's like, really, I was just like, whatever.
So around this time, you're traveling more, and you also decided to get sober.
Yeah, I got sober like 3.5 years ago now.
So was this all around the same time, like close the restaurant, do more media, or did everything just catch up to you?
Everything just kind of kept going, and all the TV, like the internet stuff turned in, like the hangover cures, and then I started doing those how-to videos, and then I did like Keep It Canada.
Which is awesome.
Keep It Canada, I watch it sometimes and I just laugh because it's like, it's kind of crazy to watch.
I mean,
it was just like a bunch of kids not knowing how to make television going out and like trying to make a weird food.
I would watch it on Delta when I would travel. I'd be like, is this on here? I was like, oh, wow, okay. And I watch it. It's great. It's a real, I mean, it's a love letter to Canada.
Yeah.
But I mean, was everything just like, was it just like a ton of things, just like the partying and the restaurant and like the media and like everything? And you're just like, I gotta put, and you had a son and a wife. Yeah. Like, did it just all, you're like, I gotta clean this up?
Yeah, it just came kind of to head. You know, I had my heart attack at 29.
That's a young age.
Yeah. So I had a heart attack at 29. And then I kept partying because I had this like Superman ego because I didn't die.
Right.
So then I partied for like 2 years after that, kind of secretly, not really secretly.
An open secret.
Yeah, it was an open secret.
It's like the thing where it's like, no, what I'm doing.
I'm just like, I just had to find like new drug dealers because none of my drug dealers would sell to me because they didn't want me to die.
Drug dealer with a heart of gold.
Oh, love those guys.
Love those guys.
Great guys. And so then, I just kind of went, I turned into a little bit of a sketchy dude because I had to go to like kind of sketchier parts of town and start hanging out with different people.
Oh, yeah. Like people who don't necessarily have your back.
Yeah. Well, no, just people that want, I'm just hanging out in weird fucking situations.
Yeah.
Just being at every single after hours. You're getting kicked out of every after hours. And
could you still listen to Husker Du at the after hours?
Oh, I wish. No, I was just playing like fucking, I don't know, just deep house.
Oh, yeah, deep. You know it's a bad scene when you're looking around, you're like, I don't know, even there's deep house on.
Oh, my God. You're just alone on a couch sniffing the keys?
Yeah.
Oh, man, it's a dream. I still remember it like yesterday.
And you're just like, yeah, I did that.
Yeah.
But you came through it.
Yeah, man. No, I really came out. I'm really thankful for it, but... I had an intervention by some of my best friends.
That's good.
It was good. It was really good. And then I stopped. I listened, and I started going to meetings and doing all that kind of stuff. And it changed my life.
And I can imagine that. I mean, with these restaurants being built around you, the shows being built around you, and you having the sort of like personality of like the party guy.
Yeah.
How did it feel to be like, I'm a different type of party guy now?
It was tough. It was scary. It was, I was really confused. I was just like so afraid that people wouldn't like me, you know, all the typical stuff.
Yeah.
And then I found out that people actually just like me, and I was like a psycho that just always was, you know, on drugs, trying to give people drugs. And
yeah.
All of a sudden I was just like, oh yeah, not everyone wants to do drugs all the time. And I was just the psycho, and everyone wasn't even partying as hard as I was. So I'm actually cool.
Yeah.
And like, this is, everyone's like cool. And it really became like, really empowering to be like, every time I met someone new, they didn't know the old me.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I was just like, oh, I can just actually be me all the fucking time. And just be a nice dude and like have fun and like in a different way. And like, I don't have to stay up till, you know, 8 a.m. blowing lines with somebody for them to be my friend.
Yeah. You can like go home. Like, I'm going home, or I'm not even going out.
I can go to bed. I can go to bed at like 11. You know, you can go have a nice dinner before 11 and go home and have cherished moments.
I mean, look, there is something to be said about having a nice dinner with your wife and going to bed. And then just hanging out with your family. Like, it's the best stuff. And you go like, oh, yeah, this.
Yeah.
So now that you're on the other side, you have a new show, which is the Hangover Show, right? Like, they took the Hangover Show and then they, like, respun it because you're sober now? Sort of Dead Set on Life?
Yeah, Dead Set on Life. And then Dead Set on Life is just, it's, you know, a Maddie show about going around, meeting people, eating food, and kind of just seeing what's going on around the world.
Yeah.
And just like, it's really like, I'm not trying to get too deep on things. I'm just trying to like meet people, interesting people, put people on, and let food be like the weird foundation of it, and then like let everything kind of grow out of that and see what's going on with these people and where they're coming from, where they're going, and just see what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, I've always felt that you can learn a lot about people if you share a meal with them, and then if you see how they make their meal and where they get everything from, you can really learn a lot about them.
Nah, for sure. Like, I think it's food is like the greatest thing in the world, because it's like, you can really, like, there's nothing. Like, look at, like, the partying, I used to think could really bring people together. I used to think, you know, oh, I did, like, an 8-ball with that dude last night. We're best friends forever. It's like, you can really get a lot more out of somebody if you're just sitting around eating and having a good time, or cooking for somebody. Cooking for somebody, getting cooked for, is like, you can't beat that. Like, mm-mm. Actually. And that's, like, reality. Like, you can't beat going into somebody's house and then cooking you a meal, or somebody coming into your house and you reciprocating that. And like, that is the thing that really draws me in to just like that it's okay not to party. It's that old me is fucking dead and gone. And it's like, this whole new thing is just like, I think just an amazing time to kind of spread that love and like positivity through food, and like, get to travel and just meet people. You know, it's really interesting, like, the people that I still stay in contact with through the show, and or just like reach out to me after the show airs, and they're like so happy with it, and like that kind of shit really, really drives me to like keep making stuff. And like, just like, it's a really kind of, it's just really inspiring to meet these people, and you know, for them like showing me just a, like an ounce of what they got, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think you're getting a lot more than an ounce.
Yeah.
And I appreciate you sharing some time with us. People want to follow you. Where can they see your travels, exploits?
I guess follow my Instagram at Maddie Matheson.
Okay. And if they want to see the shows, where can they see the shows?
You can, if you just go on like Viceland, you can watch all the shows on Vice. Well, not really, but you can find out a lot of information on the shows on Viceland.
You used to be able to watch everything online.
Yeah.
Then they got a TV channel.
Yeah, and then they kind of put the kibosh on that.
Yeah.
But you can still go on YouTube and watch all my Keep It Canada,
yeah,
all the Hangover Cures, all my how-to videos, and check out all that shit, which is like, if people have just followed me from like Dead Set on Life and that kind of shit, yeah, I was like, I really press you to go onto YouTube and watch some Keep It Canada.
I agree.
Because that shit's like buck. Like, I still think like there's nothing really like Keep It Canada out
no,
there.
It's great. And as a fan of that show, especially, it's gotten me through some early morning flights on Delta. I appreciate it. So, thanks for coming down.
Yeah,
thanks for hanging out. We have a track in the archives, then a live performance here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org.
Hi, I'm Dave Arnold, the host of Cooking Issues on the Heritage Radio Network. We all know and love Chinese takeout dishes like General Tso's chicken and egg rolls, but here's the thing. Even though we call it Chinese food, it's not like the food you'd find in China. What's the story behind this cuisine, and how did it become so popular that you can find a Chinese-American restaurant in nearly every town in the country? The answers may surprise you. Visit the Museum of Food and Drink in Brooklyn and see our newest exhibition, Chow, Making the Chinese-American Restaurant. Chow engages visitors with compelling accounts of how Chinese immigrants overcame racism and created Chinese-American cuisine. Discover the science behind the flavors of your favorite takeout dishes, feast on rotating tastings developed by the country's most talented Chinese-American chefs, and try your hand at writing your own fortune, which will be baked into actual cookies by a 1,500-pound fortune cookie machine. What better way to learn, connect, and eat? You can visit Chow at the Museum of Food and Drink on Fridays through Sundays from noon to 6. Tickets and more information can be found at mofad.org.
Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. I'm Darren Bresnitz. This is Greg Bresnitz. We have Boston in the house. Hey, Boston. What's up,
hello.
Boston?
Hello.
Thanks for driving down for this, guys.
No problem.
We were just talking about Anna's Taqueria, which is still today probably number one burrito spot, quesadilla spot.
I disagree, but it's good.
Really?
Me too.
Hey, so thanks for coming down. Hey. What's your spot?
It's not in Boston. It's a little bit outside of Boston. It's called Tacos La Pita.
Okay, so I'm talking about in Boston.
Oh, then I guess you're pretty. You're
I would actually say habaneros is my favorite.
Habaneros is really good. That's in Alston, like right in the heart of it.
Okay, I think that may have...
I mean, it has been like, what, 8.5 years since you've been there? Nine years. So.
Did you live there?
I did. I went to... I lived in Alston, Rock City.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Had a house, did shows.
Cool.
Yeah, you never heard of me. Well, why don't you introduce yourselves, who you are, what you do in the band?
I'm Carl. I play guitar.
I'm Nick. I play drums.
I'm Mike. I play the bass.
So I know the band has had a number of incarnations with Carl, you just being solo, and then you guys came in this year, but you want to kind of take a little bit back to the beginning and just give us the origins and how you guys got to here in this room defending different taco places and to guys in Williamsburg?
Well, the truth is we've been defending taco places since the beginning. I started, like, when I was... I want to say I was, like, about 18 years old, so that had to be in, like, 2007. I started writing songs and recording them just on my own under this name. But I didn't really have any intention of having it always be, like, solo stuff. Right. So after a while, I got really bored of just doing solo shows and stuff and eventually had people play along. And eventually I wanted something... solid and actually have like a solid lineup, and now we're at this.
How loud were you when it was just you?
Was it?
How loud were you when it was just you?
Oh, very quiet. In fact, one of the shows that I had that was like, I am done with, I have to do this electric now, was just like a house show playing acoustic, and there was a bunch of drunk guys just yelling at me, just like, yeah, you think you're Bob Dylan, huh? Yeah. And it was terrible.
So you really were like, all right, fuck this extreme. I'm going to the other side of this.
Well, then you had your Bob Dylan Newport moment, right? Yeah. When you plugged in?
Yeah.
Everyone was pissed.
Yeah. Oh, so angry.
we had a baby sitting outside of the studio, and we had to move the baby inside because of what's about to come. Why don't we get a song?
Sure.
Yeah, we'll do a song, right. And then we'll come back and talk more, but... you know, a little bit less talk, more rock. Give us a second to reboot. What song are you guys going to play first?
Uh-oh.
Oh, man.
We're going to... Nope. If I figure this out.
There's a little hole there.
Already coming and breaking shit. Not even one song in.
Oh, boy. Here we go. My phone. I got it.
There it is. Who do you think you are?
There you go.
All right. What's the first one you're going to play?
Love is a song, not an answer.
Okay. Live on Snacky Tunes.
Will be undone, will be deemed impossible. Oh, I felt your sign along with my sweetie little boy. One love song. One love song. I don't know how to read it. I know how. One love song. One love song. I know how to read it. I know how. I can shake it. I can take it all.
no.
Michelada down.
Michelada down.
Michelada down.
I will have to say this is the first time that I've had to wear headphones in the studio. It's...
Oh, man, these people are not happy.
They're okay.
What kind of bands usually play?
Like acoustic.
It's like the first incarnation of this band. No, it's fine. Right, it's Sunday. We wanted to kind of bring in the rock a little bit on Sunday. So, yeah, so let's talk about the new record. You know, it's an evolution from the last one that you did, which was a little bit more home studio. What was the, you know, what changed the process and what, you know, how did you guys approach this differently?
Somebody want to take this? So I can fix this microphone again.
Yeah.
I just joined this band, man. I don't know.
Yeah, Nick, well, yeah. Well, we had plans on making a record when we were last on tour, and our drummer quit the day we got back. So it seemed like
a shocker.
Yeah, and he, I don't know, he was like really hating us, and so it ended, and I just thought the band was going to be over, and then Nick just immediately
Well, hold on, if it was a solo project to begin with, I mean, the only person who, I mean, how does that work?
Well, the thing was, I finally been, like, become accustomed to the idea of it being a band, and I felt like these people have their roles in the band. If he's gone, then it's over. And also, it's very hard to find a good drummer. And I was very happy with Nick jumping in, though.
I feel like the drummers and bass players, it depends on like certain scenes. It's like one or the other interchangeable. It's hard to find.
Yeah.
And in Boston, it's the drummer.
I mean, everyone wants to be a guitar player, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah. So you guys reformed, new drummer, and then you decided to get in the studio?
Yeah.
I joined in last March, and then right from there, we like had some practices, played some shows, and then we just kind of immediately went to the studio.
Yeah, and I was only playing with the group for like 2 months at that point before we started to decide to record.
Yeah. And, but Nick had gone on a, we had toured with his other band, so he was, like, pretty, familiar with everything.
Gotcha. What other bands?
My other band's called Big Mess.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who, you also want to shout out other people in the, who you play with in the Boston scene? Because I know you guys come from, like, a pretty tight group of bands.
Sure.
Name them out. Call them out.
Well, obviously, like, Pyle, they've been kind of, the most popular, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah,
but like
you can say the word popular.
Yeah,
so, I mean Pyle's like also pretty like influential too. Like,
yeah, yeah, yeah. No, they. I mean, they're the one of the bands that's actually like doing it right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What does that mean?
They're doing it for the right reasons. Yeah, and not.
There's no like.
They're always working on things and
yeah,
always having rehearsals. Just like working on their craft,
practicing a lot. And
they're the one band that I could say that like absolutely deserves everything they've gotten. Like, and they've gained a lot of popularity, like, recently in the past, like, 2 years. And, like, it's nothing sketchy. It's nothing, like, weird. It's just all...
They
just,
didn't
like,
sell out.
Yeah, it's all deserved.
Yeah, just like, a great bunch of guys. I'm also, like, roommates with them, too. So it's, like, it's a good living situation.
Can I ask now that I guess I'm 10 years removed from, like, the DIY Boston scene, is there still selling out? Like, I feel in this day and age...
I don't know, I mean, what actually...
Not like,
that
it's
is.
Not like, it's not like, I don't know, it's not like selling out. It's just like, you know, they like, they stuck to their roots, I guess, and they still like, people like, they're still really popular and like, they, I don't know, they just rule.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, I don't really know what else to say.
No, that's totally fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ruling is an acceptable answer.
And then there's a couple new bands. There's Chandeliers. Those are good friends of ours. Fat History Month, Ski Mask.
Wait, Fat History Month?
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Sneeze, Krill.
Yeah.
New England Patriots.
No, that the Googleability on that name is probably pretty hard. Boston,
yeah, right.
New England
yeah.
Patriots.
Yeah.
It's band.
The Boston Red Sox. So.
Yeah.
And so where are you guys playing? Are there house shows or are they venues or what?
There's not so many house shows anymore, but... Yeah, we used to play like a lot of house shows.
What happened?
Cops.
Yeah, that's cops. Basically it. Yeah.
I'm not a cop.
It was like a span of a week, and they just like, as far as Boston goes, there was like a span of a week where they just like
fucked
took
everything.
Care of everything.
Oh, like, wasn't there that thing with that cop on the message board?
Yeah, Joe Sly.
Joe Sly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did they ever find out who Joe Sly actually was?
He's still puking green beer.
Oh my god, so funny. That was the lamest.
I like DIY concerts.
Yeah. Who likes DIY concerts?
There was a cop who like joined like Twitter and message boards, and he's like, I like DIY concerts. I'm still puking green beer. Where's the next show?
Yeah.
Very inconspicuous person. Yeah.
And his name was Joe Sly.
Joe Sly.
Like literally.
And his Facebook picture was like a drawing.
It was like an MS Paint drawing of like a punk with a green mohawk. Yeah.
I mean, they. Yeah, I'm not a cop.
And then
you have to tell me.
And then there was another person that was like messaging a lot of people. Who was a cop, clearly, because it was supposedly a woman, and her Facebook picture was, like, her with two people, and, like, the two people were, like, Facebook tagged as, like, Justin Bieber and the bass player from Slipknot.
Yeah, they spent, like, no time on background stories. Yeah.
No, not at all.
They're like, these kids aren't savvy.
Yeah.
They have no idea. Why don't we get another song?
Yeah, sure.
Cool.
Sure, yeah.
And we might have to buy that table outside a round of beers. Yeah. Or, by the looks of it, a bottle of wine. But we'll go with it. What are you guys going to play? What's the name of this one?
Do you want to do River?
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, this song's called Where a River Starts and Ends. This is where a river starts, though I know nothing could be perfect. There's places we pass through on our journey through the rapids, and then it takes a turn. There's some bands it goes to. Fresh water to salt. Now everyone controls you. Nothing could ever be stopped. I'll get confused. And this is where we heard her all. Oh, after I implored you. Oh, in this river, it's a ride, and it's hard to our lives. Or we will be returned to the ocean. No, never thought it was far. The river, yeah, got me. So no.
fucking hell of a stop. When the real love came out to you.
So, I mean, since you guys just kind of formed as a band and you're able to go to a studio, I mean, usually it takes years to get chemistry, and that record is really tight and really good. So, was it just kind of, you know, clicked naturally, or how did you guys feel through the process?
These guys are really good at playing their instruments, so that definitely helps.
Thanks, dude.
I'm a complete idiot when it comes to... I have no
guys, that's
real...
where you jump in and you say, no.
No, I have no real good training at all. And they're good at making sense of it all.
It's good songs, dude. Yeah. That's why.
Yeah. You guys cook? You guys eat together? Do you guys like hang out like that?
We don't hang out.
No?
No, we hang out.
Okay. What do you guys?
Do we cook together?
I don't know. Hang out, grab meals.
Carl's made me dinner before.
What'd you make?
What did I make you?
I think spaghetti.
Oh, yeah. I think I've actually cooked for both of you at some point.
Oh yeah,
as well.
You made me that pork stuff.
Yeah.
Oh yeah,
pork stuff.
Yeah. I made that like a griddle like pork and sriracha sandwich. Yeah. For you and some kind of pasta thing for you.
That's right.
Yeah. So what do you guys got coming up this fall? You guys touring more?
Yeah.
And the record's coming out middle of this month, right?
Yeah.
Exciting.
Very soon.
Big shout out to Dan.
Yeah.
He's out there.
Hell yeah.
Thank you,
yeah.
Dan, for setting this up.
Wu-Tang.
Yeah.
So what's tell us about the album. Tell us about the tour.
The tour starts a week from Thursday. So
yeah.
Next,
on the 19th.
Yeah. And it'll be for 3 weeks through the Midwest and like back up the East Coast. You can talk about the album, huh?
The album is going to be out in like right before we leave.
Yeah.
The 17th. Two days
before we leave.
Yes. Yeah. So we actually have the records. We just have to get the covers and
just get the sleeves
and we're ready to go.
Right.
Yeah.
Did you press vinyl?
Yep.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Dan helped us out with his label Exploding in Sound.
Yeah.
Boston-based label. Called Midnight Werewolf helped us out, and then a Louisville label called Sophomore Lounge helped us out.
Yeah.
So the three of those combined.
It's pretty amazing. How were you able to get all three to come together?
That's a good question.
I mean, I feel like they're all three labels are like kind of the same mindset, just helping smaller like DIY bands out. So it kind of just all made sense.
Yeah, all friends.
Yeah, all good friends. Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. So we're going to find time to get one more in here.
But what are the nuts and bolts?
Yeah, people can find you. Can they pre-order the album? Or
pre-order the album at the Bandcamp. I don't know the Bandcamp address off the top of my head.
I think it's just calmarks.bandcamp.com.
I believe you're correct.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Leave it to the drummer to know it, which no one ever says, by the way.
Yeah, you can pre-order it there. We'll be sending them out, like,
awesome. And then
next week,
Instagram, Twitter, email,
Facebook.
Town,
Facebook. We have Facebook, and that's it.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you can always write one of the labels.
You got to get that Instagram feed up for the tour.
He's got a fancy
he's the only one that has a smartphone.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
I guess I have to do that now.
What do you rock? flip phone?
Yeah, the iFlip. Yeah,
okay. I got a Go phone.
Okay. Rad. All right, guys. Well, thanks for joining us. This is our first Sunday Snacky Tunes. I actually will be doing our last Monday show tomorrow.
I will be in Chicago.
I'm going to step on out and go hug the staff on this last one so they don't murder us. But I'm going to let Darren take this out.
I want to thank everybody. Thanks, Amanda. Thanks, Heritage.
That's
thank you
short, right?
To everybody who put up with us. We got one last song, and then we'll be back next Sunday with another awesome show and some more beer drinking. Here we go. This is probably the last live band. We're allowed like one live band, like super loud live band, every 2 years. It was,
I can't even remember. Is that long ago? Oh, I can tell you in 1 second. It's not going to matter. All right. What song are you going to play? What song are you going to play for us? Oh, it was the Death by Audio guys side project.
Oh, yeah.
What song are you going to play for us?
Parking Lot.
Okay, well, here we go. Thank you so much for being on Snacky Tunes. We'll be here next week with some more. We just got some more stuff. It's going to be a lot of fun, and it's going to be a lot of good stuff. Here we go.
Thank you.
Listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.